For the season's second carte blanche concert, the husband and wife team of mezzo-soprano Sasha Cook and baritone Kelly Markgraf return to Music at Menlo with a program exploring personal artistic choices. Singers have countless options in approaching repertoire, not only of composer, but of poet and language, aesthetic and expression. Sasha and Kelly have assembled a program exploring the different elements involved in making these choices and that move us to make music. They will be joined for this recital by one of the great chamber musicians and vocal collaborative pianists of our time in Gilbert Kalish. Earlier this spring, I had a chance to catch up with Sasha and Kelly and hear their perspective on assembling the program. They took, as their starting point, the theme of Music at Menlo's 10th anniversary season, Resonance, which explores the different ways in which listeners experience music.
Sasha had the idea, actually, it was a great idea, when we were discussing the theme of the summer. Then Sasha said, well, what if we kind of try to turn that on its head a little bit and show, rather than how an audience experiences music in different veins, how we experience music or why we actually choose the music that we choose to sing on a program. So that's how it originated.
In thinking about what we wanted to do at Menlo specifically, I couldn't help but consider the fact that Menlo very much introduced me to the idea that singers had a lot to offer to instrumentalists. It was the first place that I ended up coaching, you know, pianists and young chamber musicians and string players. So our recital kind of embraces, I think, the elements of what it is to be a singer in recital versus a violinist who might choose, I would like, you know, Vivaldi and Mozart and Bartok, whatever. Singers have very different reasons for organizing their recitals, you know, from stamina to tessitura to even emotional
poet.
So much of it has to do with text, too. You want to have variety of weight. So that was one facet of our conversation. Another was us as a couple and what we have to offer. So we very much wanted to collaborate and do some duets and do some interactive stuff and find repertoire that weaves together nicely as opposed to choosing, you know, our favorite composers. So there are different reasons for each set on the recital. Vary from, you know, in Kelly's case, something that's hits home that's very close to his family history. He'll be singing in Norwegian. And for me, one of the pieces I'll do is entirely based on the fact that it's difficult and compelling because it requires a certain sort of vocalism. We're doing some fun stuff too. You know, you need a good amount of lighthearted repertoire on a vocal recital to sort of just sit back in your heels and take it easy and not feel so, you know, weighted in the front of your head. So it's interesting because we started with the Menlo theme and sort of went off on different tangents and ended up with a recital that very much is about what brings us as musicians to music and more specifically what brings us as singers and how we go about creating a recital. I mean, I've said before that I often think it's like creating a meal. You know, you have the first course, then the main dish, dessert, you know, espresso, whatever. You know, there's an arc to it. And as a couple and a married couple, we can sort of take that even further because obviously Kelly brings different things to the recital realm than I do. So why not take advantage of our differences and our strengths?
The program begins with Robert Schumann's Minnespiel, composed in 1849.
The amuse-bouche
of
the meal.
Kind of.
Right. Just a short duet, 4 or 5 minutes long, Ich bin dein Baum. So it's really just a dialogue in between two lovers. The female character starting the duet saying, you are my tree. The male character reciprocates and says, I am your gardener. It's very tender.
It seemed fitting for us specifically, and it's a very welcoming beginning to our time together, you know. And it's Schumann, so it seems also appropriate for Menlo to do a composer that's very much chamber music embracing.
Ich held in dir.
After the Schumann, Kelly offers a set of songs by Edvard Grieg, chosen in salute to his family's Norwegian heritage. And Sasha follows with four songs by Johannes Brahms, which were chosen for quite a different but no less personal reason.
So there are four Brahms songs that I chose because I've been avoiding him for 10, 15 years. I'm so intimidated by the history of singers who have done Brahms songs. He's known for this incredible legato and vocalism and connection to the earth and very just great grounded singing. So they're more introverted, subdued, darker of his songs. And then the final number is Unbewegte Laue Luft, which sort of raises everything up and you end with this fabulous exclamation of love. There's an unabashed quality to Brahms that Schumann and Schubert and even Wolf couldn't bring to the same extent. It's as if he was more himself in his writing than any other aspect of his life. You know, it's so open-throated, expansive, broad. When I think of the vocal repertoire, Brahms as a composer, but in the vocal realm, he's unique in his writing that is legato, expressive, far, far reaches of the range. It's operatic. Schumann and Schubert were so text-based that you could have almost spoken the song. In Brahms, it doesn't live without your vocal apparatus being in full gear, and you can't hide anything.
Brahms is answered by another of the great romantic song composers in Hugo Wolf. Wolf lived from 1860 to 1903. In his relatively short lifetime, he produced a similarly modest amount of instrumental music, which has contributed to his remaining somewhat in the shadow of his more universally known romantic contemporaries. But he was a composer of tremendous imagination, which came to the fore especially in his significant output of vocal music. The New Grove Dictionary writes the following of Wolf. Quote, "Profoundly responsive to poetry, he incorporated detailed readings of his chosen poems in the compositional decisions he made about every aspect of song, harmonic nuances, tonal form, melodic design, vocal declamation, pianistic texture, the relationship of voice to piano, etc. Seeking an art, quote-unquote, written with blood, he went below the surface of poetry, even where his musical purposes were inevitably distinct from the poet's, in order to recreate it in music of remarkable intensity, written, as he once proclaimed, for epicures, not amateurs." End quote. This summer, Kelly sings Wolf's Liederstrauss, composed in 1878, on text by the German romantic poet Heinrich Heine.
Gesellschaft und das Haus ist Licht erfüllt. Dort oben am hellen Fenster bewegt sich ein Schattenbild.
They're rarely performed and equally rarely recorded. I only came across them because I was looking through some albums when we were considering this recital and brainstorming, and I came across an album which fortunately came from Sasha's father's discography. His library is actually enormous. And I was looking at this album called Lieder nach Heine, And I thought, okay, Heine poetry, beautiful. I had done Dichte Liebe 2 years before, and I got to know Heine's poetry through that, so it became interesting to me. I thought, okay, Wolf setting Heine, how is that different than Schumann setting Heine? So I started listening to it, and these pieces really struck me. The reason I came to this then is because of the poetry, first and foremost. The cycle, and it is composed as a proper cycle of 7 songs, and the cycle it strikes me as a miniature, very similar in scope and direction as Winterreise or Dichte Liebe or a lot of these other romantic era song cycles that we know, where the character goes from seeing a woman at afar, a woman that he cannot have. He sees her through a window on a dark night, and she doesn't know about his longing. And then somewhere during the cycle, we move into to a dream world where he's living inside of his own dreams and imagining what it would be like to be with her. It's really remarkable how the cycles all trace a somewhat similar path.
Aus meinen großen Schmerzen mach ich die kleinen Lieder, die eben ihr klingend Gefieder und flattern nach ihrem Herzen. Sie fanden den Weg zu trauten, doch
the first half concludes with Francis Poulenc's setting of 5 poems of Max Jacob.
Poulenc, I sort of imagine in a smoky cafe, and for most of his repertoire, he stays in that cafe. There's a sort of immediacy to Poulenc. It feels more intimate somehow. The songs that I'm doing, they're slightly twisted, comical. The Max Jacob poems I've wanted to do for a long time, and it was because of the recital that they came to mind, because we needed something lighter to finish this sort of German group.
Right, I mean, we had planned this Schumann, moving into Grieg, moving into Brahms and then Wolf, and that felt very hearty.
Heavy.
And we thought it would be a nice way to finish the first half, to throw in some Poulenc.
Yeah, there's a lot of sarcasm and humor and
there's a wittiness. It almost feels, his music often feels like it should be in someone's living room just for a group of 10 people.
Something about it feels so French to me, because I imagine that smoky Parisian cafe with the piano behind some velvet curtain, and there's Poulenc, and there's no applause, it just sort of happens, and I almost could describe every set of his in the same way, because he always brings that wit even to the darker stuff.
The second half of Sasha and Kelly's recital program focuses on American music. Following the Poulenc songs, the start of the second half changes direction dramatically, with American composer Ned Roram's War Scenes.
What scene is this? Is this indeed humanity? These butchers' shambles, there they lie in an open space in the woods, 300 poor fellows.
You know, the war scenes, they're so poignant. They're so powerful and shocking, in a way, to have a composer like Ned Roram set poetry of Walt Whitman, actually I should say prose of Walt Whitman, and it's his Civil War prose. So to look at those texts and then to hear them set in a way by Ned Roram, which I think is his real gift, by the way, that he is able to create a song but stay out of the way of the text. It's almost like the song doesn't exist. He's able to be so austere in his settings that you truly feel, if they're performed well, I think one can feel like the texts are just being recited. I personally came to this piece, I chose this piece because of the Whitman poetry. It's something that has resonated with me for a long time, and I've always been interested in reading about the Civil War. It's really quite remarkable to me that that part of our history as a country is not that long ago. If it's something that at once feels far away, but it's really not so distant. And Whitman is sort of the quintessential American poet. And so I've always felt a real sense of gravity and pull towards that poetry. So I'm happy, really thrilled to present it on the recital. The way that he's able to craft music that stays out of the way of the text is his strongest trait. And then within that, you'll find this nearly bizarre sense of the use of intervals. When there are leaps in the melodic line of Roram, you'll almost never just have a simple open fifth. If he does give you a simple open fifth or an open third that is accompanied by a simple major harmony, you know it's a very lucid, poignant moment, and he's using that very purposefully, because typically what you get is a more angular vocal line and these, let's say, leaps of a minor seventh, which I think really reflect his sense of how complicated life is and what our human experience is, that it's never simple, that it's always somewhat twisted. It reflects his life in Paris and his sort of absorption of the French aesthetic and attitude towards life. So I think that's Ned's real contribution to the American song repertoire, is that sense of nothing is simple. Everything has grayness and darkness inside of it, which then frankly makes the bright moments all the brighter. He's not somebody who wants to pretend that life is all roses, and he really confronts Whitman's poetry and brings it to life in all of its ugliness, horridness, and fright, frankly, because when we read those texts, we're reminded of what we are capable of and what went on in our country's past. I think Ned is, I couldn't imagine any other American composer setting those texts, actually.
At the dance and supper room, I could not help thinking what a different scene they presented to my view.
Also on the program, Sasha sings a set of three early songs by the notorious American maverick George Crumb, a composer with whom Gilbert Kalish has enjoyed a long friendship and fruitful artistic relationship.
The Crumb I chose because of Gil, and I always like to do something on a recital that is in honor of that pianist or whoever I'm collaborating with, what they bring to mind. More specifically, you and Gil had the talk back session at Menlo,
right,
and you played one of these songs.
Right.
I was so taken with that talk and Gil's beliefs on this career in music making and collaborating, I wanted to just sort of like cheer. And then the song was played by no one else than Jen DeGaetani, one of my most favorite mezzo-sopranos. So when we started talking about the Carte Blanche, it just seemed natural. And then it's sort of a good transition from Roram. You know, here you have a fellow contemporary composer doing something that he wasn't known for. You know, it's very lyrical, non-angular, non-circular writing, It's not typical Crumb. And ever since I was a student, I've thought, I have to perform Crumb. I have to perform Crumb, and haven't had the opportunity for whatever reason. I just admire his music. So I love to support all things American. I don't think we do enough American music as classical musicians. We're always doing the great masters, you know. And there's just so much great American song. And I find that audience members want to hear something in their vernacular.
Final grouping on the program is the Irving Berlin set, and we initially, I believe I proposed doing something like that to Sasha because in my background personally, my grandfather, after coming back from World War II, actually did live shows on the radio. So even though he was a graphic designer by trade, he ended up taking long lunch breaks multiple days per week, and he would go to the radio station in Milwaukee and he would sing live shows and go back to work. So growing up, I always witnessed him singing. So he was a real source of inspiration for me, which is why I thought, why not include some music of that ilk in the recital? And also Sasha and I have some experience doing it together. We have done American music on our recitals together in the past, and it always turns out to be such a joy for the audience because all of a sudden you are into the realm of popular music. The audience gets to take a deep breath and listen to, you know, Dancing Cheek to Cheek, which everybody knows from the Fred Astaire movie Top Hat. Or even if it's an Irving Berlin song you've never heard of, the lyrics are so witty and clever that everybody gets to have a good chuckle and just, you know, let their guard down a little bit and not feel like we have to be sitting there interpreting deep romantic poetry all night. Yeah, so I think it gives us a fun denouement, so to speak, for the end for the ending of a recital, and really makes the audience feel welcome.
Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Wu Han, Patrick Castillo, and Isaac Thompson. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations: Claude Debussy's Premier Rhapsody, performed by Anthony McGill and Derek Hahn, and Olivier Messiaen's Abyss of the Birds, performed by Anthony McGill, and Praise to the Eternity of Jesus, performed by Colin Carr and Gilbert Kalish, appear courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Francis Poulenc's Clarinet Sonata, performed by Anthony McGill and Gloria Chen, appears courtesy of the artists. Robert Schumann's Romances for Clarinet and Piano are performed by clarinetist Karl-Heinz Steffens and pianist Karina Wisniewska, and appears courtesy of Tutor Zurich, Switzerland, www.tutor.ch. Carl Maria von Weber's Grand Duo Concertant, performed by James Campbell and Leonard Hokanson, appears courtesy of Marquee Classics. Robert Schumann's Minnespiel, performed by Hanno Müller-Brockmann and Graham Johnson, Hugo Wolf's Liederstrauss, performed by Stefan Gentz and Roger Vignoles, and Franz Liszt's Dante Sonata, performed by Leslie Howard, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. Johannes Brahms's Unbefleckte Lauerluft, performed by Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau and Daniel Barenboim. Ludwig van Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 13 in E-flat, Opus 27 No. 1, performed by Emil Gilels. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's Fantasia in C minor, K475, performed by Maria Joao Pires. Leo Janáček's Violin Sonata, performed by Gidon Kramer and Bartha Argerich. And Richard Strauss's Violin Sonata, performed by Gidon Kramer and Oleg Meisenberg, appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon, online at www.deutschegrammophon.com. Francis Poulenc's Five Poems of Max Jacob, performed by Felicity Lott and Pascal Roget, and Beethoven's Sonata for Violin and Piano in D Major, Opus 12, No. 1, performed by Henrik Schernig and Ingrid Hebler, are used courtesy of Decca Classics. Ned Roram's War Scenes, performed by Donald Graham and Eugene Isteman, appears courtesy of Phoenix Records. George Crumb's Night is performed by Jan de Gaetani and Gilbert Kalish, and appears courtesy of Bridge Records Incorporated, www.bridgerecords.com. Irving Berlin's Cheek to Cheek is performed by Keith Goldstein and appears courtesy of the artist. Alexander Scriabin's Piano Sonata No. 2 in G-sharp minor, Opus 19, Sonata Fantasy, performed by Albert II, appears courtesy of Centaur Records. Aaron Copland's Violin Sonata, performed by Elmar Oliveira and Robert Koenig, appears courtesy of Artec Records. Richard Strauss's Cello Sonata and Frederick Chopin's Cello Sonata are performed by David Finkel and Wuhan. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Land.